Good morning. This is Jim Colburn of Commodity Research Group. I'm here with Andy LeBeau, also of Commodity Research Group, and we're here to talk about energy markets. Along with Ed Meir, Andy and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com, where we post our blog and our podcast. We'd also like to thank our good friend Doug Stetzer of EKT Interactive Oil and Gas Training for hosting this podcast. You can check out his daily newsletter, podcasts, and learning modules at EKTinteractive.com. And our disclaimer, this podcast should be construed as market commentary, merely observing economic, political, and market conditions, and is not intended to refer to any particular trading system. We are not responsible for any trading decisions taken by anyone not intended to listen. Information is not guaranteed to be accurate. This is not an offer to buy or sell any derivative. Today is November 1st. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Jim.
I read that disclaimer and I think we're more like the two guys in the balcony in the Muppet Show. You know, and maybe hopefully without the snark, but we see markets slowly normalizing from the hurricanes, Harvey, Maria, Nate, and I want to go back a little bit. In previous podcast, you've been talking about working with a range of $45 to $55 basis WTI, and back in June when we broke below 45, you still thought the range was relevant and you thought that we would rally back into it, which we did. And now we're at the top of the range. We poked out of the $55 top today. And my question is, are the fundamentals improving?
I think the fundamentals have definitely improved over the last couple of months. There are some major factors that we see that we talked about earlier in the year, and it took a while for some of these factors to really play out. And that was, we saw an imbalance in the second half of the year between supply and demand. And I think that imbalance, namely that demand was probably going to be higher than supplies to the market, leading to a stock draw, I think that's finally playing out, and playing out in a fairly significant way. And I think the market is definitely reacting to an improving fundamental picture. I think that through a lot of the year, particularly on structure, you know, many traders and many analysts were jumping the gun, playing for backwardation, and the market wouldn't backwardate, just staying in contango, and actually the contango steepened. But now, you know, we're seeing the structure go backwardated in both Brent and WTI in response to some of the improving fundamentals.
Yeah, I think we saw those flat calls, the CSOs, the spread options, still have the, you know, if you look at the December flat call, there's about almost 60,000 open interest on that strike. So it definitely was a favorite of the market, and that's been all year long, probably more less. Lately than say earlier in the year, but that's been that flat call, and the minus 50 put as well seemed to be a range, and now it seems like people going into 2018 traders are more interested in the minus 25 put and even the minus 10 put as an area of support in that spread. But what you just said has been reflected in the marketplace.
Right. And we're seeing this backwardation, which for those of you who don't follow the markets quite as carefully, that means that the front months are going premium to the back months. And we're seeing a real steepening of the curve in both Brent and WTI. Now, WTI is still, the front month is below the second month, but if you go back second half of the year, the first months are 20 cents a month premium to the second months. And again, that's reflective of what we've been seeing on the stock side. And let's talk about that for a little bit. You look at what's happened on WTI and on U.S. total stocks. The high of the year for total stocks was 1.35 billion barrels, and that's crude and petroleum products. Currently, we're at 1.266 billion barrels, so we've drawn almost 90 million barrels since the end of June. That's about 700,000 barrels a day. And the real surplus in the market has been in the U.S. So to see some of the surplus working off is really, again, probably instructive in what we're seeing in the price. We're still long. But we're only 64 million above the 5-year average, above the 4-year average. And that, that's been like 100, 120, 130 over. So the differential relative to the 4-year average is really narrowing. And we're seeing these draws. Crude is still long too. That's 44 million. So most of it is in crude, but you look at refined products, and boy, gasoline's right at the 4-year average, and distillate is now under the 4-year average. So we're seeing an across the board stock draw in the U.S. And
Andy, yeah. how much credit would you give to exports? And I mean, it looks like crude. I'm just looking at this week's export number. Of crude oil, that's another record, right? I mean, oil is flying out of the country right now.
I'd give almost all, this big stock draw, at least on the crude side, and also on refined products, definitely, is because of export demand. And again, why is export demand so strong for U.S. products? One, at least for WTI is cheap relative to Brent. And it's remained cheap. We thought last month that it would narrow in a lot from like -7. Well, it got in under six, and then it widened right back out to over $6. So U.S. crude is cheap relative to international crudes, and as a result, the export demand. I think the 4-week average is running like 1.7 million barrels a day over. Is running 1.7 million barrels a day. Last year was only 0.4 million barrels a day. We're over a million barrels a day higher on crude exports. And similarly for refined products, not that we're cheap, but we've recaptured some of the Latin American markets that we lost during Hurricane Harvey due to refinery issues. So we're seeing demand from South America really pick up, and also there are some barrels moving from the Gulf Coast to Europe. Now, why again, besides the relative cheapness of U.S. crudes, why are these exports booming? Well, I have to believe that demand may be stronger than what we think, and that is particularly seen on the that's particularly seen on the Brent market.
So Brent is really strong. What are the fundamentals? You think it's the world demand is stronger than we think? I think the IEA had a hefty 1.6 increase in oil demand for this year. Do you think it's even higher than that?
It might be, Jim, because we're seeing Brent just fly off the shelves. There was a lot of exports to probably to Asia. It looks as though, even though it doesn't quite look on paper that it'll be economic to ship North Sea barrels to Asia, there's been a tremendous demand for Brent, and as a result, Brent went backwardated too. It was backwardated last month as well. There was some less supply of BFOE, which is the Brent related grades. But nevertheless, you know, it's got to be better. I'm thinking it's got to be better demand than what we had anticipated, and what the IEA is saying. The fourth quarter demand is going to be up pretty good over last year, 1.7 million barrels a day. It's possible it's even higher than that. And I think, Jim, you know, you look at some of the macros and
I'm wondering if it's getting a little overhyped. I mean, the stock market going higher, there's you know, you can argue that all day long, their earnings to support it, or it's too expensive. But the GDP numbers around the world, they're looking at 3.5%. They're talking about synchronized GDPs around the world, that everybody's, you know, growing now. I mean, in Europe, Asia, U.S., you know, I think Africa is expected to, oil demand's up 100,000. I think, you know, South America, Brazil might be GDP might be crossing the zero point this year, and also Argentina is doing much better. So, you know, it's synchronized around the world. So yeah, I think that does show up in some of these lower income countries have a bigger, their GDP increase has a bigger jolt to oil demand, particularly diesel. But yeah. I think that's part of it. Also, do you want to say anything about speculative activity in Brent versus WTI? It seems like if I'm a speculator and I want to be long the oil market, I would buy Brent and not WTI, because WTI is based on Cushing, Oklahoma, and we see episodes of stranded oil in that region. So, what can you say about that?
Well, the length in Brent is really hefty. I like to look at the I like to look at the difference between not the nets, but just taking longs over shorts and doing a differential that way. The Brent is 10-1 long versus short. By the WTI is only 3-1 long. So Brent is way long. I think the record gross long for Brent is, I think we're right there, right around 566,000. So the speculative length has really poured into the Brent market. Earlier this year, again, by way of an example, Brent, I think the high was 11 or 12-1 longs to short. TI was right up there at 10-1. So if you look at just the commitment of traders, TI looks undervalued relative to Brent in terms of net length as well. And you know, that could be another factor that narrows that spread in, because Brent is Brent is wicked long.
Well, that always worries me, and you never know if what the full capacity of the speculative positions are. Like, is there more money that is available to come into the market? Probably. But my concern is the IEA has a build in the first quarter of, I think it was, if I recall this correctly, it was 800,000 barrels a day. And I'm not sure the market can, once it starts, I mean, there's a lot to go before we get there, but once it starts focusing on that, I would think that it would be hard to continue the rallies, you know, past a $60 area.
For WTI.
For WTI. Well, yeah. For the world in general. I mean, I think that's a world number. So
right.
In a time of stock builds, I would think it would be hard, even though it's somewhat seasonal, I would think it would be hard to maintain a bullish flavor to the market. Now, that doesn't mean, because the IEA estimates bills like that they're actually going to come to fruition. But I'm just saying, there might be some profit taking up here, I think.
Oh, definitely. I think that's one of the factors in the markets. You know, we don't really see, or you know, I don't really see the market exploding much beyond these levels. I think there is some upside in both TI and Brent, but as we head into the first quarter, as you mentioned, Jim, it looks like that imbalance between supply and demand is going to tilt the other way, and we're going to rebuild stocks. It's just that what, you know, what rate is that going to be? If you take, we like to look at the three, IEA, OPEC, and the EIA. And if you take all three, their call on OPEC crude is about 32.2 for the first quarter. And OPEC's producing about 32.9 right now. So you're looking at an imbalance. And, you know, that may tamp the market down and possibly lessen some of the backwardation. You know, a key factor is going to be, you know, how cold is this winter going to be? Because that could add a couple of 100,000 barrels a day. Most of these forecasts are based on normal weather patterns. So if you get a very cold winter, demand could be much stronger. Conversely, a mild winter could take away a couple of 100,000 barrels a day, and the economy has to continue to grow.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you brought up OPEC. I was wondering, you know, just a quick summary of how the compliance is going. There was a recent meeting with Saudi Arabia and Russia, and how does the look going into this November 30th meeting? I mean, it seems like everybody's happy.
Yeah, it's because their strategy is finally working. So, you know, I think the Saudis and both the Russians can point to the fact that Brent is long last over 60. They had thought it would happen sooner, but it has happened. So they're talking about extending extending through 2018, which is going to, I think it's going to keep the market fairly elevated here. The compliance has been strong. OPEC production is 32.7, 32.8. Plus, you know, now we've got some geopolitical developments, and that's actually led to a supply reduction from Iraq of probably 200,000 to 300,000 barrels a day through the Turkish pipeline. So there actually has been a supply cutoff. Iraq's production was down last month. They're trying to make up for that shortfall from southern exports. They may be able to do that, but certainly, you know, that we've actually seen production decline. So that's one issue. And two, the Iranian nuclear deal is, I'm sure, Jim, that's something we'll be talking about through a lot of 2018.
Right.
Whether that deal. But I think that, it looks as though there's going to be an extension. The meeting's on November 30th. They may table it till first quarter of next year. But all indications right now is that they want to maintain this production deal through the end of 18.
What I find interesting in the options world is that the implied volatilities for the December and the January contract are pretty much the same. So December expires the 15th of November, and the vol's around 23.7. And in January, it's around 23.9. If you recall last year, people who wanted to play the OPEC meeting and the expected volatility coming out of the OPEC meeting were buyers of January and not December, because if you bought a December option, it was off the board before the meeting. And then, if I recall, the OPEC ministers were chatting a lot before the meeting, so you had a lot of price volatility going into the meeting. So really, the divergence of a lower vol in December and the higher vol in January really didn't
work. You would like to be long some D's file relative to Jan, because you did get some good price movement. Since I brought up the options world, the D60 call, we've been focusing on that because it's been the biggest, the option with the biggest open interest. It's been 60,000 all year long. Now it's about 57,000. It's pretty much, I don't say it's given up for dead, but it's got a 0.04 delta, and roughly, it's not exact, but you could say that's the probability that the market's attaching that to that option going in the money. And I think right now, Andy, you still believe it won't go in the money. Is that correct?
No, I don't think it will.
Okay, so we got till November 15th. And what's interesting is if you take it's about 57,000. If you take a 0.04 delta and multiply that by the position, you get something called the futures equivalent. So there's like 24. It's acting on a price move like a 2400 futures, and that's at this price level. But if we ever get up to 60, then that delta is roughly a half. So now you're talking about almost 30,000 contracts. So there's this phenomenon that people call a gamma rush, where the people that really have to scramble are the ones who are short those. So we've seen this happen before. It doesn't happen often, and you know, I don't want to scare anybody into anything here, but you know, when you give up an option for dead and it's got a lot of open interest and you can start moving, the market starts moving there for whatever reason, a lot of times you get people, you get a little panic. And again, it's called a gamma rush. We don't have time to get into all that today, but maybe another podcast. Anyway, well, I'll be watching that $60 call. I agree with you. I don't think it's going to come into play, but these are oil markets.
But well, I agree with you too, Jim. If it does come into play, you know, there's going to be, you know, that'll be, there will be a gamma rush. There's no doubt.
Right.
There's just no doubt. I mean, people start losing it.
So let's talk about the, we talked about Brent TI spreads. So are you thinking those things are going to narrow over time, or are they going to stay, continue to stay strong? Because we are exporting like crazy, and it may be, you know, maybe shaved a little bit. Like you said, it's bounced back. So Brent TI, you think maybe will narrow back?
I still think it's going to narrow. It's just, right. You know, it's taking a lot longer than what I had anticipated. But I think, you know, we're certainly seeing flows from, because the Dakota Access Pipeline is open, we're seeing some flows from Canada. Pad 2 is going through turnarounds right now. Pad 2 is in the Midwest. So the refiners that are supplied from Cushing are going into turnarounds. But you look at where the Gulf Coast differentials are, the physical differentials, you know, one would have to anticipate that the crude's going to start moving south out of Cushing. Exports, I think, are still going to remain strong. I don't think they're going to be, well, this week they were over 2 million barrels a day for crude. I don't think it's going to sustain. I think those numbers will start narrowing in to maybe, you know, maybe 1.6, 1.7. But nevertheless, you know, I still see stocks drawing, WTI stocks drawing through November. I would expect that, you know, as Cushing begins to drain, maybe the second or third week of the month, you know, the spread will start narrowing in. The other factor is BFOE production in December is going to be higher, so there may be a little bit more pressure on the structure of the Brent market. So I think it's going to narrow in, but I'm not alone in that trade, and maybe that's why, or that thought, maybe that's why, you know, the thing is stubborn. Yeah.
60 million barrel runs. What do you think? You're looking for an increase?
I'm looking for an increase because margins are awesome.
Right.
Just awesome. There's already been some announced turnarounds that a postponed turnaround. So I think those numbers are going to go up. But over the last week or so, there have been some refinery issues. Last night, there was a big refinery issue on the Gulf Coast. It's possible that they don't go. I thought maybe they'd increase to 16.4. Now I'm thinking maybe only 16.2 or 16.3.
And that's still.
I think runs are going up. I think gasoline production is going to go up, and gasoline, we're seasonally we demand, of course, declines now. So I think gasoline. The cracks, and I think the cracks will probably they may stay strong for a little bit here, but I think naturally they're going to weaken some. Diesel's another story. I mean, diesel, boy. I mean, the even though gasoline the front month because PADD 1 stocks got very tight because of import and export flows, but you look at the distillate stocks, and we're low. We're outright low. We're 22 million behind last year.
You
4 million below the 4-year average. Plus, Europe is pretty tight as well. So, diesel's the one to watch.
We get a good cold blast, and it will spook a lot of people.
Right.
That crack will take off.
It's already made a big move.
Right.
It's already made a big move.
Yes, true.
Right. We'll see what happens, how much has been discounted. But that's a low number going into the winter.
Getting back to the economy, we've seen two back-to-back quarters of 3% GDP growth. We've got a jobs number. We're still – the hurricane has wreaked havoc with a lot of numbers, but you were mentioning the EIA when we were talking the structures are moving so fast, the dislocations, the EIA seems to have trouble keeping up with it. I mean, they're doing a great job, but still, I mean, you were talking about the domestic demand versus exports.
Yeah, I think they're having a hard time. You see the revisions coming in the monthlies, and seemingly they're having a hard time figuring out what's exports and what's demand, what's U.S. demand, because they seem to be revising the exports up and U.S. demand down. So I think the EIA, they do a great job, and I would. Anybody that's ever been on their website every day, has to just thank them for the data that they provide, because it's outstanding. I mean, it's not always right, but what they've done in the last 2 or 3 years is excellent. But I think if you look at what the overview is, U.S. demand is still, total demand is still growing. It's going to grow next year. Gasoline demand looks like that's sort of flat. Diesel demand is growing. And, the big growth is actually on the butanes and propanes, and particularly ethane. That demand is really growing very strongly, and it looks like these NGLs are going to be growing much faster than, say, gasoline demand.
Yeah, you hear that a lot when people talk about peak oil demand and electric vehicles in terms of cars, but the sort of a somewhat of an offset to that people talk about is the petrochemical demand, for sure, and also the trucks are not becoming as efficient as, say, the cars are.
Right.
And, there's a debate. I mean, that's obviously, as I always say, it's not going to affect anyone with a December or January option position on, but it's something that we hear a lot about, we talk a lot about, is how fast are the electric vehicles going to come online, because that's definitely a disruptive technology to the oil markets. I just want to, I think we can, once again, I just, can you recap? You said you're bumping up your range a little bit, Andy?
I think because, I see November WTI stocks, or not WTI, but domestic crude stocks, continue to draw down, I think there's a chance that we go a little bit higher. I don't see anything like 60, but I think there's a chance, just looking at, you know, we're about to make new highs for the year, it looks like. And you have to go back to the August 15 contract to get some decent resistance numbers. But they're 56.80, 58, and 59. So I think somewhere between 56.80 and 58, I think the market's got a shot to get there. We'll see what we'll see what the weekly numbers are. I mean, we're not looking at any kind of explosion. Just right. I think it's a shot to go a little bit higher.
Right. Beautiful. And I just want to end, Andy. I've been reading how markets are, oil markets are slowly sort of going back to normal after the hurricanes. And I just never looked at these markets as being normal in the first place. And it goes back a long way. I mean, I want to talk just quickly about 1988. We had a November OPEC meeting. And prices were around $14. Implied volatility was around 55. And after the OPEC meeting, they agreed to cut or get within their quotas. And the market had a sharp rally. It rallied up to $16. But volatility dropped in one day from it was around 50 to down to 30. And we had a story of at least one trader that blew up, because he was so long volatility. And we were sitting next to each other, Andy. We had this conversation. This market is so unbelievable. We've never heard of anybody blowing up because of an implosion in volatility. It had always been the other way around. People selling deep out of the money calls and puts, and then the market, you know, exploding towards those strikes. This was just the opposite. And it was, it was right from the get-go. We knew this is not a normal market. You can't look at it from a normal distribution kind of situation, but anyway, it continues to fascinate us, being the market junkies that we are, and I think we'll end there.
Okay.
Anything else, Andy?
Well, there is one thing that I think traders will be looking at. They've been looking at it all year long, and one thing for sentiment is going to be how quickly U.S. production grows. The EIA has fourth quarter averaging 9.6. It was 9.56 yesterday, and in first quarter at 9.8. The other factor is how quickly these NGLs come on. The EIA, the short-term energy outlook, is looking for a huge increase in NGL production over the course of next year. So, again, we'll see what the market is going to be focusing on, whether, production, OPEC, where demand is. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of interesting moving parts, as you mentioned, Jim, as there always are. In the oil markets, which makes it such a great market.
Terrific. Okay, thank you very much. This has been Commodity Research Group. You can check us out on our website, commoditysearchgroup.com.